Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
And so what we're doing with the MDR is we're targeting a memory, and it's a somatic therapy as well. So we're pulling in the body, we're pulling negative cognitions, positive cognitions when we're doing the reprocessing. And essentially, I like to explain it as because we're accessing a memory and then reprocessing it. It's almost kind of like I use the example of, you know, apps in your phone. Mm-hmm. For instance, you can have apps, and sometimes if you don't update them, you can still use them. They just maybe don't work as efficiently as when they're updated. And right. When we're doing the reprocessing, we're taking a memory and reprocessing it.
Hello and welcome. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. That curious bit of conversation you just heard is with Dina Claybaugh. She is the founder of Insight Counseling. I had a delightful opportunity to sit down with Dina, and we talked about EMDR, which is one of the therapies that she does. EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization Processing Therapy. And she is going to talk to you all about that today and a little bit about Insight as well. I saw Dina speak at an event that I was at, and I was just so impressed with the well-roundedness and the sort of whole person, holistic perspective that they took. And then I learned about EMDR, which is again one of the things that they do, and wanted to share that with everybody. Something that I've definitely heard some wonderful things about, and I'm so curious to experience it for myself. I was trying to figure out what exactly to say about her offices, because when you walk in the door, it just feels so friendly and nice and welcoming, and just this not only beautiful space, but just this good energy, feel good kind of place to be. And as I was going through my process to write that up, I actually read the bio that Dina has on her team bio page. And I thought, I'm just going to read the first paragraph of this because it really sums up exactly what I'm trying to say, but better. Quote, Dina opened Insight Counseling with the intent of creating exactly the type of space where she could go to experience insightful healing, growth, and enhanced health. A place where all people are warmly welcomed and staff are interested in and committed to their care. Insight Counseling is that place. Like I said, I can agree with that from my experience of being in that space. In onomatopoeia speak, would be probably what I would choose. Couple other things I just want to tell you about that what they offer that we did not talk about in our discussion is that they do have a pet loss and terminal illness support group. I know, right? They meet on one Monday a month. And at the time of this recording, it is Monday evening, the first Monday of the month. So check that out if that is something that you might be in need of. They also have a suicide bereavement support group run by Dr. Deb, one of the therapists at Insight. And they're having an event coming up on April 25th. Dr. Deb will be hosting Insight's first annual full day grief retreat. They are just in process of putting that information together. So when this comes out, it may be out. If not, it will be out soon. So keep an eye out for that if that is something that you or somebody that you know may need support with. Before we dive in, I want to, of course, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, this episode, for being curious and interested in your own health and the health of the world and the community around you. If you like the work I'm doing on Wellness Renaissance and you like what you hear, please consider supporting the podcast. And you can do that through Patreon, which you can find at wellnessrenpodcast.com. That's wellness, R-E-N, podcast.com, short for Renaissance, because nobody wants to spell Renaissance. You can support us here for as low as $1 a month. And of course, if you are in position and called to do more than that, that is absolutely very appreciated. Trust me, it goes to much good use. I am very excited because one of the things that I am looking at right now is getting a microphone that I can take with me so I can do a few more things out and about and maybe go do some interviewing at events, which is something that I have wanted to do for a very long time. So thank you, thank you, thank you for all the people supporting me and making that a reality and an option. So thank you. On that note, without further ado, I want to take you into our conversation with Dina. This therapy is so intriguing and, as you will hear from Dina, very effective, which of course is where the rubber meets the road and what actually counts. I hope you enjoy. Welcome. We are sitting in Dina's office at Insight Counseling.
Welcome, Judy.
Thank you. This is a beautiful place. Yeah. You have a beautiful area and a beautiful view, even on a foggy day such
view
as this.
Of Canal Park and the Big Lake.
Yes.
Very healing.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah. Well, introduce yourself and Insight Counseling. Let people know who you are and what you guys do.
Thanks, Judy. Yes, well, Dina Claybaugh. And I am a psychotherapist, clinical social worker, and an EMDR clinician. I practice a lot of EMDR, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Soon I'm actually in a yoga teacher training. I'll be so excited when I can say I don't know how much teaching I'll do. I kind of doing the training just to kind of enhance my own practice and learn more about the practice that I love so much and have for years. So that's what I do. And I opened Insight, it's probably about 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
I'd been working in private practice a little bit here in Duluth. And I don't know, I guess I kind of always thought that I'd open a practice when I was closer to retirement, just a little office with a dog. But I don't know, I kind of wanted to do things. I wanted to incorporate mindfulness and a more holistic kind of approach than what I had found in the area at that time. I know there's a lot that has evolved even since then. So I, just kind of started with a couple other people joining me, and now we've kind of grown to be quite large here in Duluth. We have a pretty big office, and then we also have satellite offices in Hibbing and Virginia.
Okay.
Minnesota. So that's exciting. And I would say, well, we see folks of all ages. If I were to pick areas of specialization, definitely couples and families and areas of grief therapy and trauma, certainly. And that's, I mean, EMDR is helpful in those areas and more. So, but again, we do a little bit of everything since we have such a large, great team now. So,
nice.
But my area of I guess expertise, if you will. I don't know, it sounds funny to say that, but what I love to do is work primarily with adults and older adults. And a lot of EMDR. So I'm seeing folks that have experienced trauma, and I mean trauma, I'll say big T to little T, whether it's been working as emergency personnel or combat veterans, so on and so forth, or I mean little T would include, I mean, just your anxiety, depression, things like that. So lots of anxiety, and I've seen couples, I don't know, I'm kind of moving, shifting a little bit in that area lately, mostly because I wanted to be able to put more love into the grief work that I do, and that Insight does, as well as I find myself, and I think I have a paralegal background, and I worked in family law for a while, but I find myself really interested in and excited about the transition when people actually decide. I mean, I love helping them grow together, but often when you do this work, you see couples decide to grow apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I do enjoy facilitating that process, that place, and how to do that, like I said before we started, gracefully and positively and in a way that celebrates them as well as children and family, should they have that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
well, that's
sorry.
I think no, that's great. I think that is it's a needed thing. It's we don't know how to do that well in our culture, right? We have this idea that breakups and as Dan Savage says, you know, the only thing that you, how does this go? The only way to succeed at a relationship is if you die. So if the relationship breaks up, it's a failure, and we don't look at it as what we have gotten or spent, you know, so there's this kind of negativity around relationships that don't work out.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can we make that easier? We all have enough stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
How can we, you know, and when kids are involved, to be able to bring everybody together so it's just more pleasant. I mean, why not?
Right. And an opportunity, like you said, ending is kind of often the focal point, but it's like, it's a new beginning, too. Actually, just on my way to the office, NPR was doing a piece at noon here about heartbreak, broken hearts, and relationships. And yeah.
Wow. So yeah.
Well, check that out again.
Good for you. That's it's a very needed, the work that I do, I see that as a struggle for so many people. Mm-hmm. So we need that. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
EMDR. So let's talk about that. First of all, what does EMDR stand for?
EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization Reprocessing Therapy.
Okay. Okay.
Now, it was discovered really by Dr. Francine Shapiro, and over 30 years ago now. And I guess I've heard, I don't know if it's in her literature, but I've heard her say that if she could rename it, she would call it reprocessing therapy, because that's essentially what we're doing.
Okay.
in the therapy. But she said it's kind of like changing Coca-Cola. I mean, everybody knows
right.
it as EMDR. But the thing is, and it used to be where we would use eye movements, was the way that we'd use bilateral stimulation, and I can get into more of the details on how we do that, the actual technique. But now we've discovered that it's any sort of bilateral stimulation. So you can use tactile. I've got these tappers here where you get a little just vibration in each hand. You can hold it in each hand. Even if you're working with children, I mean, you can put the tappers in their shoes or in their pockets.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
just as long as there's a bilateral stimulation, or headphones. So they're getting a little tone in each ear. And a lot of clinicians, too, use a light bar so your eyes follow a light. Because otherwise it originally was just fingers
right?
in front of. Yeah.
Right.
So it looks funny. You know, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, as we'll talk, it's so effective. So EMDR.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting. Does that relate anyway? Like, you're talking the bilateral stimulation. I know this is different, but I'm just curious if there's a connection of actual tapping.
Tapping. Often people think about that.
But that's not bilateral.
Like no, and it can be. I mean, I would say tapping just, you know, slowly on each shoulder or each thigh or whatever is, if you're doing it slow, is quite relaxing.
Okay.
And there's a part of EMDR, it's called Safe Calm Place. There's some resourcing that we do. It's a relaxation technique. So I think that's similar to, I'm not really familiar with tapping. I mean, I know enough to, you know, support clients who are maybe familiar with that and using that, but I don't have any training in tapping. But at least in the brain, the bilateral stimulation is, it's sort of mirroring what occurs in dream or REM sleep. And that's when you are, that's when you're processing experiences that you've had during the day, so on and so forth. And so anyway, but I can go into
some. Okay. Yeah, well, no, that's great.
Yeah.
So talk about how does this work? Why does it work? What, you know, because again, it's one of those things that you listen, you're like, really?
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
so much. And I should even, if I can, just say how I became interested
yes,
in
please.
It.
Yes, please. Absolutely.
I did my internship, my residency at the grief support office at Essentia here in Duluth. And my supervisor, Rebel Gustafson, she's an EMDR clinician. And she was practicing. I had the opportunity to observe her with a couple clients, and I was just blown away. And she was working, I remember her working with somebody who had been in a car accident, sort of a recent experience. It was a fatal accident. She survived. And watching Rebel use EMDR, it was just incredible. I was blown away. So then I wanted to do this and experience EMDR personally. So I saw Dr. Ed Whipson. He's kind of a legend in this area. He practiced out of Superior, and he's since retired. But I saw him to work through some of my own anxieties and different things. And again, it happened so fast. I mean, the healing, the growth occurs so fast. And then after that, I went and got training.
Okay.
At the Institute, which is Dr. Shapiro's Institute. Yeah.
Okay.
And have been using it in my practice ever since. So it's been about 3-4 years.
Okay. And so there's talk therapy, which is good and helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as you're saying, this just makes things happen so much quicker.
It does, because there's so 8-phase protocol. So there's 8 phases. And it is more short term. I mean, sometimes depending on, you know, the client's experiences, maybe it may take a while. But I'll just say, if we're talking about trauma, for instance, a client who's experienced trauma, if we're using talk therapy, which can be effective, it's just a lot of talk therapy maybe that may be used as like cognitive behavior therapy, exposure therapy. And I believe the theory is that, you know, the more you talk about the trauma that you experience, you eventually become desensitized to it and it gets easier. Mm-hmm. And that may be the case sometimes, not always. We have found that sometimes that can be re-traumatizing. Mm-hmm. The beauty of EMDR is that you don't relive that experience. We pull some aspects of earlier events, which may or may not come to the surface during the eight phases. I mean, I'll certainly see clients who come in and they know that that event occurred in childhood and they want to reprocess it, or not necessarily in childhood, in adulthood as well, but they'll want to, and I can target that and do that. And also when I do, it's called a float back technique. There will be other experiences that maybe they didn't even consider traumatic at the time that have maladaptively been recorded in the brain and impact him or her today. And so what we're doing with the EMDR is we're targeting a memory, and it's a somatic therapy as well. So we're pulling in the body, we're pulling negative cognitions, positive cognitions when we're doing the reprocessing. And essentially, I like to explain it as, because we're accessing a memory and then reprocessing it, it's almost kind of like, I use the example of, you know, apps in your phone. Mm-hmm. For instance, you can have apps, and sometimes if you don't update them, you can still use them. They just maybe don't work as efficiently as when they're updated. And right. When we're doing the reprocessing, we're taking a memory and reprocessing it. So for whatever reason, and there's all kinds of theories of why it didn't get processed when it occurred, but we're able to do that, kind of bring it from stored memory to working memory, process it, reprocess it, and it becomes more adaptive.
Okay.
I've got examples. Okay. If that's helpful.
Right. Well, yeah, and I was just listening to this going, and just like an app on your phone, sometimes when you haven't updated it, it works really slowly or wrong, or, you know, mm-hmm. give an example, because I was going to toss one out, but if you've got some.
Ooh, I would love that.
Okay.
I'm thinking, yeah. Okay, so one of the experiences, there's so many. I'll just share one of my own from training or when I was working with Dr. Wibson kind of a light one would be anxiety that I had swimming. I was enjoying doing triathlons a few years ago, and I had a hard time with the open water. So one of the things that I did was this, you know, so I talked about my present experience, and through the float back brought me, which an event that I had not thought about for years and years, but I did have an experience when I was probably 9 or 10 and wanted to swim at the swimming hole in the river where I grew up. And my mother would not let me. I finally, you know, but it was like the cool place to go, mm-hmm. you know, swing off this rope and into the river. And I finally talked her into going down to the river, and I was going to prove to her, you know, how safe it was. And actually, I was with a girlfriend, and we kind of had a scary experience. We were swimming out to the sandbar, and there was quite a current, and we went a ways down the river. So it was pretty. But the kicker is, when I got back, my mother did not hug me. Like, she was probably scared out of her wits, and a little bit angry, and probably relieved that I made it. And this, again, is how I remember the event. Who knows? My mother may remember it very differently. I should really ask her about it. But I think that experience, too, of not being consoled and not, I can see where it left me feeling like I am bad, I am not safe. And for whatever reason, I think so. We reprocessed, okay, and this was just over a weekend at one of my trainings.
Wow.
And I came back, and it was in February this time of year. So I was not swimming at that time, and kind of forgot about the whole, you know, the reprocessing and everything. And I went cross country skiing with my husband. And I have anxiety when I'm skiing too, a little bit, just the speed, and especially if I'm going downhill. And we went out that weekend, and I just kind of took off. And after about 20 minutes, my husband stopped and he said, "What the heck, Dina?" You know, because normally I'm like, you know, really timid, and I just do it to connect with him. You know, usually I just go out for a run or something so I could get a workout, because skiing was not a workout for me because I was so anxious.
Sure.
And right. So, but after 20 minutes, you know, and then he said, "Oh my gosh, Dina, could it be that EMDR that you did?" And I was aware that I am typically anxious, and same thing then with swimming, you know, that I'm typically anxious, but I can't grasp those visceral, that experience anymore.
Oh,
it's just bizarre. It's like, and clients will say, it's like there's a lightness, or you just have a different relationship to it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a very light example.
Right.
But wonderful.
But truly, yeah. I mean, think about that, you know, in the whole, you can now go cross country skiing in a whole different way. Like, it's less of a stress. Mm-hmm. So that's always fun.
Yeah.
That is just so interesting because it's, because when you think of this stuff, and I'm thinking of things that sometimes, you know, it's like, okay, I don't know why this is a trauma for me. Like, why is this a thing? Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of kick back to things that happen. And you're like, but that doesn't seem like enough. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like enough that should have taken on this.
Exactly. You
stress.
Can't believe. I was working with a male client, and he was having kind of anger outbursts, and he was in his 40s. And the float back brought us to an experience he had when he was, again, like 9 or 10, and he was in a locker room, and there was an older peer in the locker room with him, and he made, this peer made my client tie his shoes. And it was just, you know, I'm sure at the time, very humiliating,
mm-hmm.
you know, but my client couldn't believe that he had not thought about that ever in mm-hmm. like the last 20-some, 30 years. You can imagine, though, how devastating that probably was mm-hmm. when he was, you know, 10 years old. And by reprocessing, it just, he all of a sudden couldn't, it's like he didn't have, again, that, I like to say he became more responsive mm-hmm. and less reactive.
Okay, right.
And just his relationship to something, right. yeah, that we think, oh, that was big deal, you
right.
know, in adulthood. But again, that visceral, so that's that somatic experience that we capture that you can't always just cognitively.
Right. Well, it's the, you know, we try so often just get over your stage fright or get
exactly.
over and it's like yeah. There are some things that I'm like in my life I'm like, you know, it doesn't matter how many times I do, or like giving blood for me is one of those things.
Oh.
Yeah, I do not sit up. It's just not good for anybody. I have no idea why.
Yeah.
I have no idea why, but it's, people have said, oh, if you gave blood 50 times, you'd be fine. I'm like, you know, no, I don't think so. It's not gotten better.
See, that desensitization.
It's not gotten better.
Yeah.
And it's, and then there are things I can also think of in my life that I am more comfortable with, and that it's like, I look at that, you know, my the person I am now doing it and the person I was when I was 20,
yeah.
and like that 20-year-old couldn't even imagine that that's possible,
yeah.
right? And so
that's great.
Yeah. So it's just, that's so fascinating.
It's very fascinating.
You talked about REM sleep, so it's like mm-hmm. this sort of duplicates that in an awake
mm-hmm.
place.
Very much awake. I'm very much keeping you in the present. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some people ask me if it's like hypnosis, and I am not trained in hypnosis. I've never participated in it, so I don't know. I don't. But you are very much awake. I make sure that you are. And we're doing multiple sets. I'm taking breaks in between and keeping you here. But you're really just allowing. I tell clients the analogy or the metaphor is that you're kind of almost like you're sitting on a train and you're just observing things passing by.
Mm.
And so we'll do multiple sets and I'll ask what you've observed, you know, during that set. Most clients do relax their eyes, shut their eyes. And then I know what to do
mm-hmm.
Based on how they respond.
Okay.
And it's incredible. Incredible, Judy, that there's kind of a typical, if you will, but people end up experiencing, I mean, when it works, which I'll say in my experience, 98%. I mean,
wow,
awesome. But again, the responses will be just, it's lighter, it's different. I hate to even say too much because I don't tell them what I think,
right.
I don't want to plant it, but it's just, I'll just say it's real.
Wow.
You know, it's consistent, it's real, and...
Well, we think of how many things in our lives are those little barriers that we can't necessarily explain, mm-hmm. but we know that we will work around them, and we can't even always describe them. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's a barrier, but we don't even realize that we have... where we've been dancing around this
yeah.
barrier,
yeah.
you know? So, what
That's a beautiful
thing
way
to mm-hmm. lift that so you
mm-hmm.
can just go through life and...
Yeah.
and do move forward instead
right.
of sideways.
Exactly. Oh, I love that. And then we don't have to sit here and analyze it. I mean, I can, like I've been mm-hmm. doing with the examples of those childhood years for myself and the client. I can analyze it now, but like during the protocol, during the therapy, we don't even have to do that. Sometimes clients will. I mean, and that's actually how I came up with the name Insight.
Oh.
Couple things. I love Vipassana meditation and Insight meditation. And then just, I would say, through my EMDR practice, just the insights that people discover that they had not before
mm-hmm.
through the EMDR.
And I think of what a relief that must be for some people to not only have the experience, it sounds like you are touching those memories, but do you necessarily have to even know what the actual cause of something is?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. And for some clients, some people, that might be important, and I'll go there. You know, we can spend time doing that, but it's not necessary to facilitate the healing process. So.
Okay. Oh, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's so, I was reading a little bit, and one of the things that I thought was really interesting is kind of in describing how our mind works. They use an example in the book, as you know, if you say roses are red, violets are blue, is just what happens next, right?
Yeah.
And it's the concept that our responses are not mental as much as they're physical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an interesting thing, because it explains why sometimes it's so hard for people to just do something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think of, you know, I work with the men's groups at DAIP, and so, you know, it's about trying to help them do different things at times, but it's also interesting hearing their stories when they felt like there wasn't even that moment to think. It was just a body response, you know?
Yes.
And so it's like how that is real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that experience
that.
Is real.
Yeah. And again, kind of how I said that we become more responsive and less reactive. There is a pause. There is, I mean, I look at when I'm working with folks, it's increasing their window of tolerance, you know, to be able to take in and have, sometimes I call it surfing, you know, I mean, it's just, there will be waves, you know, there will be opportunities to test. But again, that visceral experience, that reactive experience after we've done the EMDR and maybe some other work, I mean, they just become a little more relaxed. There's more pause. There's opportunity to do it different.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, I mean, habits are incredible.
Right.
They're so strong.
Right.
Yeah.
And this works, I mean, it works for emotional trauma, but I'm thinking of other things that people experience, like physical pain. We sometimes talk about that's, you know, it's a real pain.
Yeah.
But it's somehow coming from our head. But understanding that if you can heal and dump some of those things, that your body can process that pain differently.
You bet. Because we store, I mean, one of my favorite texts is Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps a Score. And, I mean, it's just, oh, he's great. And he's really, I've seen him a couple times now, and he's hilarious. In that he talks about EMDR many years ago. He's like, this silly stuff with the fingers. I mean, he didn't believe, you know, that it could be. And now, I mean, he has an entire chapter of his book is devoted to EMDR therapy. But that we do store, right?
Mm-hmm.
Experiences and our stories and our traumas and our grief in our body. And now we know with all the research, you know, in neuroscience that we're learning. I mean, and we experience that trauma in the same way that we would experience pain by having our hand on a hot stove. So to have a therapy like EMDR where we're accessing that, and that's one of why, where are you feeling in your body is one of the prompts, you know, so I connect to that, pair it with the memory, with the cognition, negative cognition, maybe, you know, I'm not safe. Positive cognition, I am safe.
Okay. And the interesting thing, too, is this is an automatic response that your body is happening. It's doing. But like you said, it's not having to remember the mantra in your head of what you should be thinking in this moment. It's just part of your body now.
Yep. You let go. You let go with, you know, the support of the therapist. And hopefully at that point, you've created a healing, safe space for them to really relax and just let whatever happens happen. Because the body, like any wound, the brain, like any wound, wants to heal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you get a cut and it's just, it wants to heal. And same with the brain and the body and trauma, when it's experienced trauma.
We are fascinating creatures. I mean, it is so interesting, because like you say, that the body wants to heal, but then there's this, you know, I think of it like when people are struggling with food. You know, you want to eat the salad, but the chocolate cake is right there staring at you, calling your name in a way that salad never can, perhaps, you know, until you've shifted your body. And then, I mean, I've had that experience from my food experiences of knowing that there are times when that salad will absolutely be more appetizing than the cake, right? And you can hardly understand that in your being until you've experienced it.
Yep.
Out of curiosity, is this something that you've had experience working with people with food
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yep.
I've worked with people, I mean, so many things now that I can't even, you know, surround. Because, and like you said, with the was it the cake and the salad? I mean, it's often not about the cake or the salad. It's right. Emotional. You know, there's a story of some sort in there. And, a control and behavior that we've become familiar with. Because possibly, I mean, a lot of maladaptive behaviors, I don't know what to call them, I hate to say negative, I just
things
think
that, malad- things that don't
yes.
serve us.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I love that, things that don't serve us, often helped us survive at some point in our life.
Right?
Most
right.
often childhood, which is why kind of a lot of times, you know, we are visiting childhood when we're doing this work, whether that's the individual work or the work with couples. And I mean, I think we're remiss not to look at attachment and those relationships early on and experiences that we had.
So you said there's 8 steps?
Yes,
so
8, we call them phases.
Phases, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so does that kind of mean that it's typically 8 sessions, or is that kind of a minimum? How does this work, like, in a time frame for people?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think I've done EMDR, and it can be effective in, I mean, even 2 or 3 sessions. And I have some clients that I've worked with because, well, the thing is, too, that it can be so quick, which is nice, right? I mean, versus the talk therapy that maybe goes on and on.
Years and years for sure. Yes.
Yes. So I love it because I'm really, I mean, I do EMDR every day. So a majority of the clients I see, even if they don't come to me for EMDR, it's hard for them to walk through these doors and not experience it because I feel so strongly about it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's up to them. But I just, at this point, I'd be remiss to not be using EMDR in my practice. I just can't imagine my practice without it. But anyway, there will be some, and I kind of want to, you know, sometimes move people through because I get so booked out and it does happen so fast, but then they'll come back and, oh, now I want to reprocess this. Now I want to do this, which is a good, you know, it's a good thing, but it's 8 in the 8 phases. I mean, it varies. It's not, you know, like phase 1 on one day.
Right.
Depends on how things are going. Everything from the beginning is history taking to the last phase is positive installation. So it's almost like creating scenarios that you anticipate will occur. So I'm going to be in a triathlon next year, you know, so then actually using your new positive cognition, this new insight, this new experience that you've developed or that you've, I guess, developed, discovered with the EMDR therapy and kind of installing it.
Okay.
Essentially kind of practicing, seeing it through with some bilateral stimulation. And yeah,
okay. So it's basic. I mean, as you've kind of said, I just want to clarify, it's, you know, it's just like coming in for any other therapy appointment.
Exactly.
It's just something you're adding to what you're doing.
Yep. It's kind of neat, too, in that the work is done here. There is, I mean, you don't have homework. A lot of cognitive behavior therapies, you get a lot of homework and a lot of practice and things like that. I guess the only homework, if you will, would be to just notice if anything comes up in between sessions. And I have a whole, you know, kind of worksheet that I, you know, share. And just, I mean, it's really just taking note if any memories surface, any thoughts or, experiences. But it's really just to notice what comes up. And as I said, there's a positive resourcing relaxation techniques. So I'll do that. I'll install a safer, calm place for clients and encourage them to continue practicing that on their own. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I still use my original safer, calm place. It's in a canoe in the Boundary Waters.
Oh,
and
nice.
I still, in the moment, because I have installed it, so I mean, I don't even have to tap, like the bilateral, I said, we call these butterfly hugs where you tap on each shoulder.
Okay.
Yeah, slowly back and forth, and you bring up your image, and then you have a word, and mine is paddling. But I'll bring it up, and seriously, I just don't, I mean, I'm back to sleep.
Oh,
you
my
know,
gosh.
It's just, yeah, associated with calm.
Right.
And that's really important, and what I love, too, about another part of what I love about EMDR is that mindfulness, that relaxation, that, you know, calming that nervous system, pulling in that parasympathetic, and we do some breath work and everything is it's also incorporated into that.
Which, again, I mean, it's something, you know, we're all living kind of, it seems like crazy lives. Mm. In just there's so much more input and stimulation and stuff coming at us that we sadly need the other side of helping us come down and come back to ourselves.
I have to be so. I spend a lot of time in my life, personally and with others, helping to facilitate that. I just think we have our work cut out for us. If you, no matter where you where you exist, it's we are being bombarded.
Yeah.
And it is truly a practice and an intention to connect with our parasympathetic, connect with our calm, and
Well, but that's exciting. I know I've heard other people talk about it, and everybody seems to have such a positive experience with it. I've never experienced it myself, but it's fascinating. I'm very curious about it. Because I know. Well, you know, hey, yeah. Again, we know so much more about how our brain works, and we know that though we know a lot more, it's also more of a mystery, too. I mean, it's a mystery that some of the things that work, work.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic because along with our crazy, busy, fast-moving lives, sometimes having something to help speed along the healing process is also really helpful.
Right.
So, wonderful. Anything else we need to know about the therapy? Or, you know, sometimes we're sitting at home listening to something and we're thinking, well, that's great that works. But it wouldn't work on us, on this thing, on this thing that I've dealt with.
I'm glad you asked that because I do come across some. Well, I'll say, I mean, there are certainly instances where maybe someone doesn't want to forget. You know, they're worried that by participating in EMDR, they're going to forget an experience or they're going to develop some anger toward a parent or, you know, something like that. And that's not at all. Again, it's just pulling the body in, allowing people to notice what's coming. I mean, it's just, we're not analyzing. We don't have to blame. Again, sometimes some of the target memories that we use, we're not even sure if it happened or not.
Oh, wow.
It, and that's okay.
But our brain thinks it did, and that's the important thing.
It's what surfaced, and we go with it.
Uh-huh.
So I would say that is just if somebody, you know, is scared about either revisiting a memory or afraid, like, especially in grief, you know, it's like, I don't want to forget, you know, that person.
Right.
Or some of the experiences in that channel, we call them memory channels. And that does not happen. I've never seen that happen. Again, it's just there's a shift in the relationship to the memory. Another, I would say the folks that I've worked with that experience kind of a heavy depression, I've found are the more, and I don't know that this is written anywhere, but this has just been my experience in practice, that those folks are a little bit more hesitant to get going with the EMDR.
Hmm.
And the more, and I continue to try to spend some time with that because, of course, I want to get in there, you know, and it's like, oh, it'll, you know. But I think, one of the symptoms of depression is this hopelessness, you know. And I guess if we're feeling, which many people who are experiencing depression do, that nothing's going to make me feel better, you know. So I would say, yes, EMDR can be helpful. And is effective, and it's okay to, you know, of course I meet clients where they are, but I've just found that it's been more challenging in that.
Okay, interesting.
In that, yeah.
Right. Well, and I'm, you know, sometimes it's your, not that I want to say people identify with it, because I don't think it's that conscientious, but it's almost this, probably not, yeah, not even a conscious fear, but that you don't know what the change is going to be, and this is how you've been. You want to get better, but there's still that fear of what that's going to look like and how to let that go.
Exactly,
so this
Judy.
Is a great facilitation. This sounds like a very smooth and graceful facilitation to let that happen rather than a painful, frightening, trying to figure out your new identity type of thing.
Yeah, well said. Because again, there are aspects of the depression that have protected folks.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we honor that. And that's what I spend a lot of time talking about, that, like, all this. I mean, so when memories surface, I mean, I do a kind of a container exercise to just keep it here. And I say, you know, the hard stuff, the good stuff, I mean, all of it, I keep it here. I honor it because it's all a part of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to, it's almost like dropping the pieces in the office, just dropping them in our space here. And really, I see clients as being able to pick up what they want to keep with them, you know, what they want to take. And I'm going to honor it all, no matter what you take and what you leave behind.
Mm-hmm.
And you also said something else that made me think. Oh, there's an exercise that I do, and this is acceptance and commitment therapy. So it's a different form of therapy, but it's a great exercise. And you just kind of alluded to that piece with depression, and the exercise is called "The Pain Is Gone, Now What?"
Hmm.
That is a really powerful, it can be a really powerful exercise.
Right.
Yeah,
it is a weird thing to think about that, because I know I understand it on a level, but not on a complete level of that whole, when somebody, say, has lived with chronic pain all of their life, you want it gone, but you don't quite know how that world is going to look like without it. Mm-hmm. So it's a fearful thing to go to, because it's sort of a weird piece of your identity. Mm-hmm. And to let go of that, even though that's not the identity you want. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what's so fascinating about our heads, is there's so much going on in here that we don't have total control over.
Yeah. You know? And how to, embracing that. Mm. We can, it's learning to live. So again, acceptance and commitment therapy takes us to a turning toward our depression, turning toward our anxiety, turning toward our grief, and how to move forward, how to grow with the anxiety, the depression, the grief, rather than in spite of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's such a beautiful place to be. It's really an honoring. And I am not anxiety. I experience anxiety, and actually it serves me sometimes, in ways. And I am not that. I am Dina. Mm-hmm. In my experience, there was a couple years ago, I was shopping in the cities, and there was a sales associate at one of my favorite stores, and she was wearing a gold necklace, and it said anxiety. So it was just anxiety.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, that is awesome. I love that. So I have ordered that. I love that. And I just, what is it? I mean, just, yeah. I mean, obviously, just the message that, but I just feel like, proud of. And and the stigmas associated with emotional health, and so we're combating. I feel like always combating that too.
Yeah,
and really trying to love on. It's just an aspect of health.
Right. Well, right. And it's interesting. Do you kind of think that we're in like interesting times around that? Because what I feel like I'm seeing, mental health and all of the anxiety, all of those things are stigmatized for sure. At the same time, we're also more able to talk about them, live with them, be with them, with social media and TV and all of those things. You now see celebrities at their best and their worst, and you start to get an idea that they're real people, where it feels like to me back in the, say, I don't know what years to say, but the 30s, 40s, 50s, they were these unreachable people that were perfect. They didn't do anything wrong, because you never saw that. Or if they did, it was kind of a scandal, or it was shoved under the rug. Now we see all of this stuff, and we start to realize everybody's real. And then we start to figure out, how do we fit into that? Because I think we're all sort of struggling with that, is how do we fit into this grand scheme? But I think of people like Brené Brown being one of those people who is so able to call out her own stuff, and still it is about, I can be this person, and I'm this person too. I'm still trying to figure out how to do being human well.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah. And I'm so, I love to hear you say you're seeing that shift, and I am too. And I feel really passionate about that. Insight that it's just to be very welcoming, and it can be, I've worked place, and again, I'm kind of dating myself, but yes, I've seen over the years, it kind of, the door to an office like Insight lightening a bit, and being more, and being easier to walk through and to seek support and seek help, and which of course we would do with anything else. If you have a toothache or any other physical areas of health, we don't hesitate to seek support.
Right.
And I do feel that people are accessing it more, and certainly the celebrity and just culture and media and everything is helping that.
Right. We know that people are, it has its goods and its bads, but we know that people
are
real.
Human.
Right.
Emotions.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and I know one of the videos that I watched, a person was commenting on, it's our brains not wiring right. It's not something that we have done. So you wouldn't not go get your arm, a broken arm fixed, and we don't throw that on you. So why not this too? But it's, again, all of those stigmas and all of the things that come with that make it a little bit of a different process, I think.
Yeah. So. People are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And I just, my focus is just and what is right with you, not what is wrong with you. I mean, yeah, what are those areas of challenge that you want to enhance in your life? It's just that you are beautiful and amazing, and everybody, I believe, is born that way, and it's just the environment and, you know, experiences, events, and things can, yeah, shift, and
right.
That there is, I wouldn't do this if I didn't know and believe that people can grow no matter where they are in life, and grow and heal and
every step forward.
Yeah.
Well, how do people get in touch with you and Insight if they would like to
definitely
talk to you?
Well, I mean, our website, I guess, is I actually have a page devoted to EMDR, and the EMDRIA is the international organization that I'm a part of. They just put out a new video, and so I have that on our website. So it's insightcounselingduluth.com or insightduluth.com. You can access that page, which will describe a little bit more about EMDR, and then you'll see our team of therapists, and I don't even know the number off the top of my head right now, how many of us practice EMDR, but several. And in fact, Virginia Hibbing office, one of the clinicians there is going through training in February, so excited. I mean, there are times I just, there's just so much to do, but I want to be, you know, in Virginia and Hibbing, like, a day a week just doing EMDR.
Oh, wow.
I love that rural. I'm from northern Minnesota, and so I really just love the rural presence and access to care. I would say our website, and but beyond Insight, I mean, there are so many amazing clinicians around the area here, and in fact I connect with several of them every month because I'm pursuing additional supervision consultation in EMDR to become further certifications, and ultimately I want to be able to train and consult and supervise clinicians as they're going through that process. We just want more of it. And so beyond, I would suggest, well, there's psychologytoday.com is a common, kind of a popular site that a lot of clinicians will post their bios, where they're working and the areas of expertise. If you're specifically, you know, you're looking at EMDR, I would suggest going to EMDR.com. That is the institute, and I know I'm listed on there and the other clinicians here at Insight, so you can, once you've gone through the training, you can be listed in their directory. So if you're looking at Duluth or beyond, there would be clinicians in there. And similarly with EMDRIA, EMDRIA.org, there's a directory in there. And I will say, if you are seeking an EMDR clinician, I would ask the clinician if their training was EMDRIA, EMDRIA, it's the International Association, if it was approved. Just, you know, sometimes you see these kind of offshoots of weekend, and maybe they're great, but I just, EMDRIA kind of holds the gold standard in kind of accreditation, if you will.
Okay.
So that would be important.
Okay.
To me, at least, when
sure.
I'm looking for a therapist.
Okay.
And those sites, of course, have a ton of research, and there's even documentary out now, and there's, lots out there. So, and then just contacting us, and we have pamphlets and just more resources available to folks, too.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow. Anything else? Anything else you want to share?
Oh, just, I mean, how much fun it's been to meet you, Judy, and your podcast, which I have some catching up to do. I was kind of over the holidays, as you know, had some things come up, but
yes.
I really love your podcast. I love, and as soon as you sat down, like, I grabbed my notepad because I know you've already connected me, you know, the Death Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
I have to check that out, and I love chatting with you, and
I hope
this was fun, and any way that I can help you, the community, and just kind of share in resources that help people, you know, connect to health and wellness, and the good stuff is beautiful, and
that's
you.
What it's all about, trying to help people find the people that they need, and know, if nothing else, just know that they're there,
right.
So, thank you.
It's all about connection.
It is.
And healing through relational cultural theory, another kind of practice of mine. It's just, it's all about connection with people, nature, animals, and we thrive there.
Awesome.
So,
well, thank you. This has been fun.
Thanks, Judy. Thank you.
It's very thought-provoking when we think about how much easier it seems for our bodies and our brains to take on bad habits. It seems much easier than when we are trying to get our body to switch over to good habits. And I think it's interesting, as Dina talked about, the fact that those habits have somehow protected us from something. So it might allow for some space for us to be a little bit more understanding or curious about what that is about for us. And this therapy can walk right through some of that and just help us get to the other side, which is really interesting. Hearing her talk about people dealing with PTSD and things that really have our body putting up barriers, being able to drop those and move forward and live our lives, those are huge things. For that person experiencing that, that is really huge and phenomenally amazing to be able to just go forth and live life differently and more comfortably and without stress and anxiety. What a beautiful thing. Early on in the conversation, I think it was like 16 minutes or so into our conversation, she talked about the difference between immersion therapy and EMDR. And I mentioned the concept that I've had things in my life where they get easier over time. And what I didn't fully finish my thought there was, things get easier over time, but there's still that resistance. There's still that stress. There's still, you know, it's not walking into something with comfort and ease. And the way that she's talking about the experience with herself and people she has worked with is that that is kind of just lifted and gone. And there is a lightness. That's a whole different thing than just being able to do something over and over and getting more okay with it. That sort of difference of tolerance or maybe acceptance and maybe aspects of joy, but to bring in lightness and ease into, again, some of those areas where we're struggling, very intriguing to me. I can differentiate in my body what I perceive those differences might be like. We'll see. Thank you so much for listening. Please check out the rest of the podcast episodes and topics at wellnessrenpodcast.com. We welcome you to engage both on the podcast website under the show notes as well as on Facebook, on the Facebook posts. Oh, and that reminds me, we did sort of an impromptu contest this last week on Facebook, and I want to say congratulations to Sue Mackey of Wisconsin, who was the winner. Those who shared the post got put in a drawing, and she won our gift certificate to Amazon. So thank you very much for playing, everyone, and sharing the post, and we'll probably be doing some more of those in the future. So keep an eye on the Facebook page. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next week. Take good care, and may you continue to find the pieces that fit with grace and ease into your health and wellness puzzle. See you next time.